Open Floor is brought to you by FreshBooks. For freelancers and small business owners, FreshBooks takes the pain out of accounting. Have a question about the service? A real live human will answer every call in about three rings. Get your 30-day free trial by going to freshbooks.com/openfloor and entering Open Floor.
We're about to play Mercer and warming up, and my coach is like, you gotta come to the bat like 5 minutes ago before the tip. And like, that's what? Like, that was like the first time we ever did something like that. He's like, you gotta come to the bat. I'm like, all right, give me a second. So I go around, go through the line again, come back around. I see this look on his face. He's like, you gotta go. And I walk to the back. It's like police everywhere. The president of the university is there. The athletic director's out there. My mom's out there. And they're like, you gotta come with us. And we ended up losing the game by 1 point. And, you know, right when the game was over is when I was released. And I was a little fishy.
Hi, everyone. This is Lee Jenkins, host of Open Floor, SI's NBA podcast, where every week we go inside the journeys of players, coaches, and executives around the league. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Open Floor. Today, we welcome to the Open Floor Kent Bazemore, product of tiny Kerfield, North Carolina, population 300. Once known for his towel waving on the bench in Golden State, Bazemore is now doing far more as a starting wing for the Atlanta Hawks, where he is shooting 40% from three-point range and often defending opponents 4 inches taller than he is. This summer, he'll be one of the more coveted free agents on the market, but for now, he's trying to boost the Hawks back to where they were a year ago. Hey, Kent, thanks for joining us.
I appreciate it, man.
So I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, what's the best thing to order at the Bazemore Country Kitchen?
Man, I used to love the two barbecue sandwiches with a side of fries. That was like my go-to and a Sunkist.
Did you work there or did you just eat there when you were a kid?
No. Yeah, I just ate there. My uncle ran that spot for about, let's say, almost 40 years. And my mom worked there. And, you know, every day after school or at the YMCA practice, we'll go up there, me and my younger brother, and grab some dinner.
I mean, your town, Kerfield, North Carolina, is 300 people. Were you a total country kid, or was it just hoops? What was your childhood like?
It was super rural. A lot of grass, a lot of fields. It was a little bit of both. It was all sports. And that's all we had to do was, because I had about 15, 20 kids that we all grew up about the same age. So we pretty much did everything, any sport we wanted to. We had enough people to do, you know, whatever. So I had a wide array of, you know, activities.
What was your court like?
Oh, my court was kind of like a dismantled driveway, you know, just a little wider, maybe 30 feet wide, I think, and probably three-quarter court in length. And I was like little sand pits, you know, grass growing in between the cracks. And, a spot like right by the driveway that was like completely grass. So, you know, it was a challenge, you know, just stand on your feet. It made for some very rugged games.
I mean, that was horse stables before, right? That they converted for you?
No, it was a house, a huge house that like set up on this hill. It was two lots, and we actually had some neighbors move in one of the lots beside us, and we took this lot, and it was just like a piece of a slab of cement there, and it had to be probably 75, 80 years old, you know, just, you know, from the weather and all that stuff. You know, the grass growing up underneath it, you know, it was in pretty bad shape, but we would like sweep it off with this broom, with those big brooms,
yeah,
as best we could, and we got after it.
And that's where everybody gathered, didn't they?
Yeah. I had people come from, you know, all over. You know, some of my friends up the road would like ride their bikes down, you know, probably 20-minute bike ride, you know, just to come up and play hoops and, you know, ride back home. We stay pretty busy.
Your given name is Kenneth, and I think you went by that when you were a little kid. Why did you switch to Kent?
My dad, I'm a junior, and Everyone called my dad Kent, and you know, I was referred to as Lil' Kent. So I just kind of stuck with it, and it sounds a lot better for announcers and stuff, you know, when they say it in arenas.
Wasn't there like a Kenneth in your town, though, who was always like causing ruckus?
Oh, yeah. That's my cousin. His name was Lil' Kenny. His name was Kenneth, too, but they call him, his dad, Kenny, and they call my dad Kent. So we both were always up to something. And, he passed away a few months ago. So, we were real close growing up.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Was that something you went home for?
No, we were actually in season when it happened. So I wasn't able to make it down, but you know, I speak to his cousins, his first cousins a lot, and you know, just check in on them every now and again.
Did your mom teach you the game, or who taught you to play?
Kind of by trial and error. You know, my mom played in high school. My dad played a little bit when he was, abroad in the military. So, they were both athletic. You know, my mom's brother was a good quarterback. And, he played baseball in high school. So I got some good genetics, you know, from just being, you know, from a family of athletes. And I just learned by playing. I got my first real instruction, I would say. I've had some great coaches, throughout my life, you know, even growing up, just about, you know, a lot of men just being fathers, you know, father figures, you know, just, you know, because they spent so much time with you, they felt obligated to kind of teach you life lessons. So in that aspect, I had a lot of, you know, great coaches, but I didn't get my first real instruction probably until I got to college, and I redshirted, and I actually had to sit out and like watch the game and kind of become a student of it.
I mean, you went to Birdie High. Your mom went there too. It looks pretty far away from Kerrfield, like at least an hour away. Did that bus ride ever get tiring?
No, you know, it was pretty routine, and where we are, you know, it takes an hour to get anywhere. So it's probably just another day. You know, you get up at like 6:15, 6:30, before the sun comes up in the fall and the winter. And you stand outside, and then you can hear the bus, you know, because it's so quiet. So the bus will start on the other street, so you can kind of time it, and it will be around your place. And that was that, you know, you get on the bus, and you would talk with your friends. You know, you would, you know, argue about Kobe and T-Mac. You argue about, you know, whatever was going on. Pokemon, you would battle your Digimon. You would do whatever you needed to do while you had that hour, you know, to get to school.
You hear GMs and scouts say, like, energy, effort's a skill. Is that something you always had, or was that kind of developed as you were growing up?
Oh, I've always had, you know, energy and effort. I'm a very passionate person, you know. You know, regardless of what I have my hands in, and I was playing football growing up, and I loved football, and you know, I ran track in high school, was all state my junior senior year in track. So you know, whatever, you know, I put my hands on, I've always tried to give it my all. You know, that's the only way you can play the game, you know, because you can't, you know, you go out there and you cheat yourself and cheat your teammates and cheat the people watching, you know. Especially in today's league, you know, people spend all this money, you know, to come out and see you play, and you know, they're wearing your jerseys, they're rooting for you, and you know, it's only right to go out there and just give you all every night.
Where do you think that motor comes from?
I think it's circumstance. You know, growing up, you know, basketball for me, once I was old enough to understand, you know, I figured that was my way out. You know, from down there, you know, it's not really much going on in Kelford, Berkeley County for that fact. So, you know, I knew for me, basketball, you know, opened my horizons and lead to numerous opportunities, and you know, it was up to me to seize it. So whenever I got the chance to play the game, I just, you know, played as hard as I could, and you know, a lot of words that I heard growing up was, you know, he's raw. He's, you know, he has a great level of athleticism. He's long, you know. So he has a chance, you know, all I kept hearing, he has a chance. That's all it took for me, you know, to keep working hard was for someone to have, you know, a little bit of faith in me and, you know, just give me an opportunity.
You had an incredible college career at Old Dominion, but it was a really tough ending. How much do you think back on that final game? How much do you think it's kind of shaped you going forward?
I mean, it's probably a blessing in disguise, man. You know, you never really know why certain things happen, but, you know, you take them as lessons and not losses. And, you know, it's, you know, unfortunate situation that I didn't get to play in my last college game, but, you know, I wouldn't trade it, you know, if it meant that I wouldn't be in the NBA right now. So, you know, it's just how the cookie crumbles sometimes, but you got to roll with the punches.
I mean, what happened that night? Was it like the police came to the arena and took you away? I mean, was it that simple, or what are your recollections of that whole deal?
So I was warming up. We're about to play Mercer, who's right up the street from Atlanta. So we're about to play Mercer and warming up, and my coach is like, you got to come to the bat. It's like 5 minutes ago before the tip. I'm like, that's what? Like, that was like the first time he ever said something like that. He's like, I come to the back. So I'm like, all right, give me a second. So I go around, I go through the line again, come back around. I see this look on his face. He's like, we got to go. And I walk to the back. It's like police everywhere. The president of the university is there. The athletic director's out there. My mom's out there. And they're like, you got to come with us. And they got an anonymous tip from someone that I will be playing at the game that night, which is probably the most absurd thing ever. you know, I've been playing on TV
right
the entire year. You know, doing interviews. You know, my face was on a 26-foot poster on the side of the arena. So, you know, the timing sucked. You know, but like I say, everything happens for a reason. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, I get the last laugh.
And so you had to be following along the game, because this all stemmed from a DUI that happened earlier, and you're following along. Are you following along with the game even as they took you in, and you're in full uniform and everything like that?
Yeah, I was in the back of the car, ankles taped, jersey on, you know, whatever I wore in the game I had on. And there was a security guard at the down in Virginia Beach that was gracious enough to kind of keep me in the loop. And we ended up losing the game by 1 point. And, you know, right when the game was over is when I was released. So, you know, it was a little fishy, but, you know.
And you know then at that point, because that was a postseason game, a CTI game, you know then your college career's over and it's on to the next.
Yep. Then it was, I turned my focus to the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, PIT. And, you know, I went there and that didn't go as well because, you know, everybody, you know, had found out by then and that's all people wanted to talk about. So it was kind of a distraction. I played awful, like bad. Like, I don't think the team won any games I was on. You know, I mean, I really was like, it was bad. And didn't have any NBA workouts, you know, right after. But, you know, my agent, Austin Walton, got me a shot, got my foot in the door.
How much do you think what happened affected your draft stock, or was it more that it just affected you personally so the workouts didn't go maybe as well as you want them to go?
I'm not sure how it affected my draft stock because I broke my foot going into my senior year. I had a pretty decent NCAA tournament my junior year, and I broke my foot going into my senior year. So, you know, I was never really on Draft Express. I mean, I think I was on there, but I didn't even have a profile picture. So, I mean, that's been a story all my life. I remember, what was it? Max Preps.
Yeah.
It was at the high school. And like, I mean, you'd be on there, you're not ranked, you don't have a picture, you don't have your stats, you know? So I never was really into that kind of stuff anyway, so drafting. So I'm not really sure how it affected that, but it did affect me, you know, just, you know, being embarrassed and, you know, just irresponsible, you know, and you know, a lot of people, you know, once I found out, and once they found out and they learned out how the police department handled it, and they kind of, you know, backed me, and a lot of people came, you know, for just giving me words of encouragement. You know, I'm human, you know, and everyone makes mistakes. It's how you bounce back from it.
And you recently made the largest gift ever by a former monarch to Old Dominion. What inspired that?
You know, Old Dominion is instrumental in my growth. You know, they, you know, with how much responsibility you don't have in college, you know, they allowed me to grow, and, you know, the people there took great care of me, you know, as far as the academics, you know, even on the court, you know, even when I broke my foot, my athletic trainer, Jason Mitchell, you know, bust his tail, staying late, you know, just helping me get healthy, and April Brett, who's the academic advisor there, you know, she helped me squeeze out 2 degrees. you know, Wood Selig, just, you know, the athletic director there now, he's just a tremendous guy, President Broderick, and I go all the way down the list. You know, that was just, you know, my way of, you know, saying thank you and, you know, just trying to get involved. Because I love that school. I love Old Dominion. I love everything about it. I recommend it to anyone. It's a great school. You know, it's not huge. It's not, you know, the Michigan States or the Dukes of the world, but, you know, you can go there. You can, you know, have a great time and get a great education. And it's in a great area.
So, okay, you signed with Oklahoma City after the draft. You hurt your knee before summer league. Then you went to the Warriors for summer league. How close were you at that point to Europe or to going over to, I think it was Ukraine?
Yeah, I had signed a $90,000 contract to the Ukraine, and summer league was going on, and August 1st was the deadline for us to, like, either void the contract in the Ukraine, or I had to leave that day. And I played, you know, I went to Vegas on that knee, and every night I would go out and run like a mile and a half, 2 mile loop in Vegas at night.
On the Strip?
Just trying to get it. Yeah. Well, it was, so we stayed in the Mandalay Bay Hotel, and like right behind it, it was like an overpass. You know, overpass, and I ran up like loop like 3 or 4 times
on a bad knee.
Yeah, just trying to, you know, for me, like running. When I was coming up, like I loved running. Like even the summer before I broke my foot, I would run like miles, like 2 miles, 3 miles, 3.5 miles, like just for the heck of it. Like I love running. It does so much for like the mind. Like you talk to yourself, you like push yourself through certain things, and that's what I was getting back to, you know, just, you know, tapping back into, you know, that mindset that, you know, you're here for a purpose, and you got your foot in the door, and you know, you got to seize this opportunity. And I hadn't played in the game in like over a week, you know, because of my knee, and I was just locked in, and I got a job.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more Kent Bazemore. As podcasters, we appreciate the value of time, your time specifically. So if you're a freelancer or small business owner, stop wasting your time hunched over your accounts. Let FreshBooks do the heavy lifting so you can get out and grow your business. For a better way to manage your books and make tax season easy, try FreshBooks, a cloud accounting software designed exclusively for service-based small business owners. It's the personal accountant you've always needed right in your pocket. FreshBooks is fast. You can create and send an invoice in 30 seconds. It's easy for customers to pay online, and FreshBooks clients get paid 5 days faster than average. Have a question about the service? Just contact their award-winning support team and get help from real live humans. They answer every call in about 3 rings. No phone tree, no let me escalate that, no I'll get back to you, just helpful service at the drop of a hat. From landscapers to web designers, your time is better spent at quarterback than on the offensive line. FreshBooks has features that make invoicing, expenses, and faxes easy. Right now, FreshBooks is offering my listeners 30 days of unrestricted use totally free, and you don't need a credit card to sign up. To get this 30-day free trial, just go to freshbooks.com/openfloor and enter open floor in the How You Heard About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/openfloor and enter promo code openfloor. As a basketball fan, you're probably very familiar with Ernie Johnson, host of the NBA on TNT, but you've never heard him like this. On the SI Media podcast, Ernie opens up to Richard Deitch about working with the likes of Charles Barkley, Shaq, and Kenny Smith, and he'll speak on his public battle to overcome cancer and return to the studio. Ernie Johnson, this week on the SI Media podcast with Richard Deitch. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher, or at si.com/podcasts. So before your rookie year, ESPN ranks you 499 out of 500 players. How much attention did you pay to that?
I paid a lot of attention to it. You know, I mean, that's pretty embarrassing, man. You rank 499 out of 500 people, and the last guy behind you is not even in the league. And there's some guys from in front of me that weren't even in the league at the time. So everything's like that. You have to cling on to. You can't just ignore it because, you know, somewhere in there is the fact. You know, it's just true. You know, they got you there for a reason. So it's a long climb to the top, but, you know, that's what life's about, challenges and embracing them. And, I mean, it's one thing that can motivate, you know, the human being is a challenge, and it just depends on how you take it. Do you embrace it or do you let it affect you?
You kind of love that number, right? I mean, you sort of started to embrace it a little bit.
Yes, I still love it. I have T-shirts made by Under Armour that has $4.99 on them, right on my shoe still, just a part of me. And it humbles me because I can look back and see, you know, where I've come from to where I am and how far I have to go.
I mean, you obviously became famous in Golden State for the celebrations on the bench and that kind of thing. Was any of it planned, or was that just sort of your exuberance coming out?
Oh, yeah. It was my ode to the game of basketball, just being able to watch the best players in the world and night the bases. And I had to pay a dime for it. And I get a front row seat to see Kevin Durant, you know, get to see Steph Curry play 82 games, you know, plus the playoffs. You know, just to get to, you know, just be around a great group of guys. You know, I had probably the best veterans I could ask for as a rookie, and you know, at a first class organization. You know, and you know, they gave me a chance, so you know, I just tried to help the team and the organization in any way I could.
I mean, from afar, it looked like, hey, that guy's happy to be here. You know, but it sounds like you were maybe on the inside, not quite as content. Like, obviously you wanted to, you know, you wanted to be the one on the floor too. I mean, did it sort of bring about a misconception that you were so enthusiastic on the bench, but clearly hungry on the inside to do more?
Yeah. I wouldn't take it as a misconception, but I definitely, as a competitor, I'm a very competitive guy. You know, I can turn a fun game of Monopoly into a battleship game. So, I mean, it's just who I am. And, you know, you're out there, you're watching these guys, you know, especially guys that came like rookies, and, you know, you're like, they're getting minutes. And, you know, you, as a young player, you don't really understand the business yet or understand what goes into rotation and, you know, why coaches play certain players and all that stuff. And, you know, you just want to be out there. You know, you work hard every day. You know, your coach is telling you you're getting better. You know, the guys you're working with telling you you're getting better, but you don't really have a chance to showcase it. And that's why I think the D League kind of saved, the D League was like my vent. You know, when I went down there and played, you know, I never lost a game in the D League. never lost a game in the summer league. You know, so whenever I played, you know, outside the NBA, it was business and it was fun, you know, because I actually got to play 30, 35 minutes, you know, run up and down and, you know, just play, you know, the game I love.
Were you going up and back to Santa Cruz?
Yes, it was it's probably like an hour, 15-minute drive. So I would leave in the morning, get there for shoot around, play, come back that night. Then 9 out of 10, the Warriors would have, the Golden State Warriors would have a game the next night. So we'll get there, you know, get to the gym at about 3:30, work out from 3:30 to 4:30, and, you know, suit up and root for my guys.
And when you're rooting for him, it wasn't hard for you to do that. It's not hard for you because you see some guys and they're on the bench and they, you know, you could see it. They wear it. Their disappointment. You're able to kind of mask that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, that's just how you stay engaged. You know, you never know. You know, Coach Jackson started using me later on in the season for like defensive possessions, like in the game situations to get a stop. So. If I'm over there sitting down for 47 and a half minutes and, you know, he calls my name and I'm cold, you know, it's only making it worse for yourself. And I'll be pouring sweat just like the rest of the guys some games. And, you know, it's, you're always locked in. You know what's going on. You have a feeling of, you know, the game flow. You see a guy you may have to guard, and you got your eye on him. And, you know, you just in tune and locked in.
You were playing a lot with Draymond, getting to know him. Could you tell they were building something extremely special there?
Oh, yeah. You know, even, you know, Festus and Harrison, Draymond, you know, that class that I came in with in 2012, you know, we're a special group. And, you know, the guys we had there already, you know, Steph Clay, you know, Bogut, you know, David Lee, you know, it was just a super, like, great group of guys, man. Like, you know, we had the most fun, you know, off the floor. Like, our team chemistry was unreal. You know, it's hard to duplicate that in this league. You know, the teams that are the closest together, you know, typically have the best success on the floor because, you know, you're out there playing for each other. And, you know, as they just wore that, you know, that charisma, that the chemistry. They bought it every day, you know, Bob Myers, Joe Lacob, Peter Guber, you know, the front office there, they do a great job of, you know, getting the right guys in there and you know, getting some winners.
I mean, you were always an elite defender, but how did you become the shooter you are today? Because I remember you used to have kind of a hitch in your shot, and you completely ironed that out.
A lot of reps, man. I mean, first you have to understand, you know, the art of the jump shot and why it's called a jump shot and what makes it a jump shot. You know, you got to understand the ins and outs of it, you know, kind of like a golf swing. You know, once you understand the purpose of a golf swing or, you know, the purpose of a jump shot, the purpose of the elbow being in a certain spot on your jump shot, your fingers, why you want to shoot it this way, you know, it kind of, you know, makes it a lot easier for you. You know, I was just shooting the ball, honestly, at first. You know, just shooting it at the rim, you know, aiming it, I'm trying to make it fall in the hole. But now, you know, it's just it's much more to that. You know, it's science behind you. Understand the science behind the jump shot. It makes everything a little bit easier. And you can go in there and you can work on your jump shot so much more efficiently.
When was it that happened? Like when you were doing those drills where you take some fingers off the ball, you're shooting with fewer fingers and kind of rehabbing your shot. Was that in Golden State or afterward?
That was my first year in Atlanta. Ben Sullivan came up from San Antonio as a shooting coach here, and you know, he had watched a lot of film on my jumper, and you know, told me we had to change it, and you know, to build consistency, and that's what this, you know, it's all about, consistency. If you can shoot as close to the same shot, you know, as much as possible, you know, as many times as you can. You see your percentages go up, you know, get a quicker release so you can get it off quicker and you know, you don't have to wind it up and toss it at the rim.
When DeMar had left last summer, did you know it would change everything for you or were you still kind of, you know, it's kind of like wait and see approach?
And I mean, I knew things would change, but, you know, I just went about my business, you know. My summer, I continued to work on my game and shooting and, you know, stayed in the gym. You know, I did everything that I, you know, would have done, you know, any other summer, you know. So didn't put any pressure on myself, you know, because that's the worst thing you could do is, you know, try to come in and fill someone's shoes. And, you know, everyone knows how big Damari was when he left, you know, how much he meant to this team. And, you know, I didn't want to come in, you know, saying that I'm going to do everything he did and, you know, try to replace that. You know, I just continued to work on my game, growing to myself, learn a little bit more about the offense and just get better.
I mean, you're shooting 40% from three, but you're also constantly guarding bigger guys every night. I mean, do you feel that the next morning?
Sometimes, but, you know, it's a challenge. You know, it's like I said, man, challenges are great. You know, if it was easy, you know, everybody would be, you know, in the NBA. But, you know, your team calls upon you to do certain things. You know, you got to answer the call. And, you know, for me, I have nothing to lose guarding those guys, you know, giving up 4 or 5 inches. 30, 40, 50 pounds on some nights, you know, so it doesn't matter, man. I mean, I'm gonna have to do it regardless. So, I like it. I mean, I pride myself in, you know, being a strong guy. You know, I'm in the weight room a lot, you know, working with my strength coaches, just on, you know, staying strong. And I can tell on the floor, you know, it's not as easy as people may think, you know, guys 4 inches short and giving up 50 pounds, but, I know how to use my feet, use my length, and just make it tough on guys.
I mean, yeah, I was curious about that. Is there a kind of technical trick to that when you are smaller defending someone bigger, or is it almost 100% just mentality and toughness?
It's a little bit of both. You know, there's definitely some technicalities in the getting around a guy, you know, and just making it hard for him, fighting his touch. You know, you can't really go chest to chest with those guys like that. You know, you hurt yourself, honestly. You know, it's a long season. You know, you don't want to be out there playing on a bruised collarbone because you're trying to stand up LeBron James, you know, or you just, you know, use your feet, use the quickness, use the length, and try to push his catch out and, you know, rely on your teammates behind you to kind of give you help defense.
On opening night, you were starting for the Hawks. I know your parents were there at that game. I mean, being in that moment, did you kind of look back at all on, you know, on everything we just talked about, on your whole journey, 499, ODU? I mean, did you kind of allow yourself at all to think about how far you come?
You know, not really, man. I've been, you know, living in the moment. And I think it's something I've, you know, I'm new to, just, you know, learning how to do that. And I think that's probably the most important thing right now is, you know, not, you know, letting your hair down because of where you come from, or, you know, just, you know, looking ahead at where you're trying to get. And I think that keeps you, you know, hungry. And, you know, at times when you have the time, like All-Star break, and, you know, you can look back, and that's the humbling piece, you know. So it takes a great mixture of both to kind of stay even keel and pressing forward.
I mean, you've had such a great individual season. Do you ever wonder if how much of that is whether you're substantially better or if it's just you finally got an opportunity, you finally gotten the right fit? Do you ever kind of think about that?
Yeah. And like I said, I mean, with all these, with everything that's happened this year, is definitely fit. You know, Atlanta is a great fit for me. You know, the way they space the floor, where the ball moves, it's not like an ISO ball. It's, I can tell you, I'm probably one of the worst ISO players in the league. I haven't even worked on any of that stuff yet. So, you know, to save my butt, you know, it's good that, you know, I can score off, you know, movement and slashing and catching shoots and driving the ball, and a little bit of pick and roll here and there. And then I have gotten a lot better, I think, from year one to year two here. You know, just, you know, decision making and shooting and when to shoot, when to pass, when to cut, you know, just, you know, every year you play in this league and you play at such a high level, your mind definitely adapts to that, and you know that just adds growth.
You'll be one of the most coveted wing free agents this summer. When you talk about the fit of Atlanta, how much will you take that into account when you're out on the free agent market? Like, if you know a team plays a lot of ISO, you just said you don't see yourself as a great ISO player. Are those kind of questions and things you're going to be considering as you take it forward this summer?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, basketball is, when it comes to free agency, you know, basketball is super important. But, you know, there's other things for me, you know, like state taxes and standard cost of living, things like that that go into that equation as well. But, you know, so yeah, I just think about that thing, those things a little bit different. But I haven't even, you know, begin to think about, you know, what's ahead for this summer, you know, because you got to get there first. And I still have some goals that I need to check off the list before the season's over anyway. And no need blindsiding yourself, you know, trying to look ahead.
Like, what are those? What are those goals you got to check off?
We need that playoff run, man, to get where we were last year and to come up short like that, to get that taste in your mouth. Just, you know how close you were, you know, to you know, plan, you know, for the ultimate prize. You know, it's definitely makes you hungry. And, you know, getting back there, you know, it's definitely one of the goals. And I think, you know, we have so much work to do as a team, you know, to get back to that spot. But I think we have the guys in the locker room, the character guys, and guys that show up every day to get it done.
I remember last year talking to you guys about kind of the chemistry you had with the group dinners and the card games, you know, guys cheering for the screen that sets up the pass, that sets up the shot. And I know there's still big Uno games on the plane and stuff, but is that chemistry still the same, or does it inevitably change with time? Is it hard to kind of bottle it up?
No, the chemistry is definitely the same. And I think, you know, this year is, since, you know, when you get teams back, you know, you get like 80% of your roster back and everyone's gotten better. It's just all about, you know, us fitting together again, you know, because some players add certain things to their game. You know, we're just still trying to figure it out. You know, Paul's gotten a lot better. Al's gotten a lot better. Jeff T, Dennis, you know, myself. You know, I can go down the list. You know, we added, you know, a few new pieces with Splitter and Tim Hardaway. So we haven't yet caught stride, but we know what we're capable of. You know, it's been some games where we show spurts, and it's been some stretches where we show spurts of how good of a team we can be. And it's just a matter of time now.
I mean, you guys had such an incredible rhythm, you know, in the first few months of last season. What is it, do you think? I mean, can it be recaptured here in the next couple of months, or does it have to be kind of reinventing yourselves in a different way?
I think, you know, we caught a lot of teams by surprise last year, you know, because, you know, they finished eighth in the East. And then this year, you know, last year, a lot of people thought it was facade, you know, he's just hot. But you watch film on us and you play against us, it's a totally different thing, you know, the way the ball moved, you know, the high caliber of, you know, plays we made, you know, the passing, all that stuff, you know, it's a lot different when you play against us. But, you know, like I say, you know, with the new pieces we have and with everyone getting better, we just, you know, we're like scratching the surfaces, you know, trying to figure out, know, what guys are going to do, what roles are going to be in, things like that.
Do you still run?
No. I actually cycle now. But two summers ago when I was coming off my tendon tear, I was cycling a lot. Last summer, being a little bit more healthy, I spent a little bit more time in the gym. So I think I'll get back to it. You know, I didn't want to you know, coming off an injury, you go through a season, you don't want to beat that same injury up by going out and running, you know, right after that. So I think I'll get back into that this summer for sure.
So do you bike, like, will you get on the bike and ride? Do you ride around, or are you just biking, like, in the gym?
Oh, no, I have a track bike, and my girlfriend and I go out and do 30 miles, 35 miles, you know, depending on how we feel, maybe up to 50 sometimes. And
wow.
Just get out, ride, you know, enjoy outside. And, you know, it's definitely mental and physical. So it's a great workout. It's low impact. And, you know, you can feel it.
Where do you like to bike?
West Paces Ferry here in Atlanta is like, it's great because it has hills, it's flat. You know, it has a little bit of everything. But when we were living in the Bay Area, we did a ton of cycling out there.
You think it's, I mean, you think part of it's mental, part of it's just a way to decompress?
Yeah, it's definitely mental, man. Just you climbing up that hill and, you know, those huge hills, and you know, you got to fight through it. You know, the bike's not going to move itself, and you're clipped in. So if you stop pedaling, you can fall over. So I mean, you got so much going against you. You got gravity. You got this hill in front of you. You got, you know, bugs. You got, you know, whatever. It's a lot being thrown at you. And, it's definitely, if you aren't ready mentally, you got to get your mind right, you know, going into those rides, because they can kick your tail.
All right. Hey, Ken, I appreciate you doing this. And seriously, congratulations on everything this season. It's been fun to watch.
All right, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot. Have a great second half. Thanks so much to Kent Bazemore for joining us on today's show. If you have any feedback or suggestions, make sure to get in touch with the show. You can find me on Twitter at @SI_LeeJenkins or my producer, Alan Kim, @AlanXKim, and use the hashtag OpenFloor. Make sure to subscribe to the Open Floor podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and leave a review if you like what you hear. You can also find more great Sports Illustrated podcasts at si.com/podcasts. Thanks for tuning in, and check back next week for a new episode of Open Floor.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.